an Osho talk. From Darkness to Light, Responses to Questions, number 4.
Would you please comment on the death penalty?
The death penalty is a glaring proof of man's inhumanity to man. It shows that man is still living in the barbarous age. Civilization still remains an idea. It has not become a reality. The death penalty is so idiotic that you will have to look from all the aspects to understand why such an idiotic thing has continued in all the civilizations, cultures, nations, even in few countries where it was dropped, it has been adopted again. In few other countries where it has been dropped, it has been replaced by life imprisonment, which is worse than death penalty itself. It is better to die in a single moment rather than go on dying slowly for 50 years, 60 years. Changing from death penalty to life sentence is going not towards civilization, it is going still deeper into barbarous, inhuman darkness, unconsciousness. The first thing to remember is that the death penalty is not really a punishment. If you cannot give life as reward, you cannot give death as a penalty. This is a simple logic. There cannot be two opinions about it. If you cannot give life to people, what right you have to take their life? I am reminded of a true story. It happened that two criminals were in search of a treasure that was hidden in a castle. Many people have worked but have not found the way. But somehow these two criminals stumbled upon the treasure. The treasure was so vast that one of the two was not willing to divide it. The only way was to kill the other. But in killing the other, he may get caught, and there was danger, and now he could not take any risk because the whole treasure was in his hands. He managed a very cunning way. He disappeared and spread a rumor that he has been murdered. And he left all the proofs that will prove that his friend is the murderer. The friend was caught with all the proofs. His revolver was there. Two bullets were missing. His fingerprints were on the revolver. His handkerchief had fallen with his name engraved on it. And only he knew the place where the other friend was hiding in the jungles against the police, because they had other crimes also. And there was a price on both of them to be caught alive or dead. He could not prove his innocence. There was no way. Everything went against him. He was given death penalty. He knew he has not murdered his friend. He knew that this is whole it is a plot. His friend is not dead. It is just to keep the whole treasure that he has been removed in a legal way, out of the way. But he escaped from the prison before he was executed. After 12 years, he came into the court dragging a dead body of a very famous politician, rich man of the city. And he told to the court, it was the same judge, that I have murdered this man, and I dare you to punish me. But first, let me tell you the whole story. I am the man 12 years before you had sentenced to death. I escaped from the prison because I was absolutely innocent, but I had no proof. In fact, innocence have never any proof. Proofs are far the crime, are against the crime, but innocence has no proof. He said, now I have murdered the man you had charged me 12 years before to have murdered. This is the man. If your first judgment was right, then you cannot punish me again for the same murder, because that man was murdered 12 years before. And if your first judgment is not right, how can you be sure that your second judgment is going to be right? Can you punish a man for murdering a single man twice? It is really very difficult to decide. He said, the only crime I have committed is escaping from the jail. But can you call it a crime? When you punish an innocent man, to death, who is the criminal? You or me? And this man plotted the whole thing. He managed all those proofs because he had my revolver, he had my handkerchief, he managed all those proofs, escaped from there with the treasure that we had found both, became a rich man, famous, changed his name, his personality, saved his beard and his hairdo and became respectable, opened a hospital, a school, made a temple. And this is the man who managed the plot as if he has been murdered. In that way, he was saved from other crimes for which police was searching him. Now he is murdered. So that file was closed. He killed two birds by one stone. He killed me, not directly, but through a legal procedure. He used you all idiots to kill me, so that he becomes the whole owner of the treasure. And he became. And by the same strategy, he removed all crimes against him. The file was closed. The man was dead. Of course, his body was not found. The murderer has been very clever because he was a known criminal. The story has many implications. The man asked if I was sentenced to death and I had not escaped and was executed, what would have been the case now? If it had come to be known that the man thought to be murdered is alive, were you able to give me life back? If you cannot give life back, what right you have to take it away? It is said the judge resigns. Apologized to the man and said, perhaps I have done many crimes in my life. A strange thing all over the world is that unless you are proved innocent, you are guilty. This goes against all humanitarian ideals, democracy, freedom, respect for individuality. It goes against all. The rules should be, unless you are proved guilty, you are innocent. Yes, it is said only in words. In reality, the case is just the opposite. For example, this city, Rajneeshpuram, is in the opinion of Attorney General of Oregon, illegal. It is just an opinion. He is not a judge. He has to go before the court to prove it. Unless he proves that the city is guilty of being illegal, the city is legal, innocent. Unless proved innocence needs no proof. But this is not the case. Although America goes on claiming to be the greatest democracy in the world, it is sheer bullshit. The Supreme Court of America goes on declaring that unless a person is proved guilty, he is innocent. Innocence needs no proof. Otherwise, it will be impossible to live for anybody. If everybody has to prove his innocence, otherwise he is a guilty man. He should be thrown into jail because he cannot prove his innocence. And how do you prove your innocence? Innocence is not an act. It leaves no traces behind, no evidences. So the Supreme Court says that this is our standpoint, that unless a man is proved guilty, he is innocent. But this is only said because our city is already being taken by the state government, by the federal government, as illegal without proving it before a court. The case is still in the court. The court is theirs. But they cannot wait even for the court to decide. The federal government has stopped giving the support that was due to the city. Not only that, the federal government has asked that the money that they have given in 2 years' time should be returned back. For 2 years, the city was legal. And what support they have given? $265. I would like the mayor of your city to return the money with interest. Such a poor government, giving such a great support to the city. Certainly needs at least bank rate interest on the great money, $265. These nuts. Think they are democratic. The state government has stopped giving their part. The Attorney General has been forcing the police department to declare our city's police also illegal. This is strange. You have not proved us guilty. You cannot prove us guilty. In fact, your own court has incorporated the city with all legalities fulfilled. For 2 years, your government, state and federal both have been accepting the city. The police department accepts the city, trains the police, has its police department in the city. You arrange the elections for the mayor, for the council. Everything proves that the city was legal. Just one man who wants to rise in political power, wants to become the next governor, is in need of us. Without our support in Oregon, nobody can become the governor. But our support is a strange kind of support. Anybody who wants to win an election has to be against us. Just being against us is enough to gain the support of all the bigots, of all the Christians, of all the orthodox conventional people, of all those who think that Oregon is their property. Just to be against us, without proving in a court, and even if you prove in one court, that does not mean you have proved it, we can appeal. The case will be decided at least within 20 to 30 years' time, not before that. It will have to go up to the Supreme Court of the United States. We are not going to be humiliated in any way. And when the law is in our favor, the whole democratic concept is behind us. All the values that democracy cherishes are in our support. There is no reason at all. But they have started accepting us as illegal. This is how man goes on saying one thing and goes on doing just its opposite. He talks about being civilized, cultured, he is not civilized, not cultured. The death penalty is a proof enough. This is the rule of a barbarous society. Eye for the eye. And head for a head. If somebody cuts your one hand, then in a barbarous society, this is a simple law. One of your hands should be cut. The same has been carried down the ages. Death penalty is exactly the same law, eye for an eye. A man is thought that he has murdered somebody, then he should be murdered. But it is strange, if killing somebody is a crime, then how can you remove crime from society by committing the same crime again? There was one man murdered, now there are two men murdered. And it is not certain that this man murdered that man, because to prove a murder is not an easy thing. And if murder is wrong, then whether it is committed by the man or by the society and its court, it makes no difference. Killing certainly is crime. Death penalty is a crime committed by the society against a single individual who is helpless. I cannot call it a penalty. It is a crime. And you can understand why it is committed. It is a revenge. The society is taking the revenge because the man did not follow the rules of the society. The society is ready to kill him. But nobody bothers. That when somebody murders, it shows that man is psychologically sick. Rather, sending him to imprisonment or to be executed, he should be sent into a nursing home where he can be taken care of physically, psychologically, spiritually. He is sick. He needs all the compassion of the society. There is no question of penalty, punishment. Yes, it is true. One man is murdered. We cannot do anything about it. By murdering this man, do you think the other will come back to life? If that was possible, I will be all in support that this man should be removed. He is not worth being part of the society, and the other should be revived. But that does not happen. The other is gone forever. There is no way to revive him. Yes, you can do one thing, you can kill this man too. You are trying to wash blood by blood, mud by mud. You are not aware what has happened in the history in many cases. 300 years before, the madman was thought to be pretending. In many cultures, in many other cultures, he was thought to be possessed by a ghost. In many other cultures, he was thought to be mad, but treatable by punishment. And these were the three ways mad people were taken care of. They were treated by beatings. A strange treatment. By taking their blood out, now you give blood transfusion. They just used to do the opposite. They used to take the blood out of the man. It was thought that he has too much energy. Naturally, when his blood was taken out, he became weak. He started showing signs of weakness because too much blood was taken out, and it was thought they have cured him from his madness. By beating a man, naturally once in a while it used to happen, the man came to his senses. It was almost like a man is asleep, and you start beating him and he wakes up. A madman has fallen out of his conscious mind. If you beat him too hard, once in a while it may happen that he wakes up into his consciousness again. That became a proof that beating is a right treatment. But it used to happen only once in a while. 99% cases were unnecessarily beaten. But that one exception was the rule. It was thought that he is possessed by spirits, ghosts, then to beat him. Because if he is possessed by a ghost, the beating will reach to the ghost, not to him. You are not beating him, you are really beating the ghosts who are possessing him. And because of beating, they will escape. And once in a while, but just once in a while, there is 1%, not more than that. I have been in one place . It was very famous for mad people. Hundreds of mad people were brought to that place. It was on the bank of a river, a temple. And the priest must have been a butcher, at least for a few hundred lives. He looked a butcher. He gave good beating. They were chained, good beating, no food, and very strong laxatives. And I have seen that once in a while a person came to his senses. Strong laxatives for a few days with no food cleaned his inner system. Beatings brought him back a little consciousness. No food, hunger. A hungry man cannot afford to be mad. Because his body is in such torture, to be mad you need a little bit of comfortable life situation. You can see it. More comfortable a society, more luxurious, affluent a culture, more people go mad. More poor a society, starving, hungry, less people go mad. Madness need in the first place a mind. But a hungry person has no nourishment for the mind. He is undernourished. His mind is not in a situation to go nuts. For that the mind needs more energy than ordinarily is involved in life. Madness is a rich man's disease. The poor man cannot afford it. So when you keep a person hungry and give him laxatives, it cleanses his inner system, makes him so hungry that he becomes bodily oriented. He forgets the mind. The question is the body. He is no more interested in mind and mind games. Madness is a mind game. So once in a while, I have seen there people being cured, but that one person cured will spread the rumor all around, and hundreds of people were coming there. The temple became very rich. I had gone many times to see there, but I met only once a man who had been cured. Others came just beaten, hungry, starved, back to their home, more sick, more weak. Many died through his treatment. But in India, if the treatment is being given in a temple, sacred place, by the priest, it is not a crime if you die. In fact, you are fortunate that you are dying in a sacred place. You will be born on a higher level of consciousness. So it is not a crime. But I spoke against the man wherever I went, and I told that this is absolutely criminal. What authority he has, or what medical qualifications he has. Is he a psychiatrist, physiologist? He is only a priest. But priests have been treating mad people for centuries in the same way all over the world. Now we know that a mad person cannot be treated this way. Mad people were put into imprisoned, isolated cells. Still, that is happening around the world because we don't know what to do. So just to hide our ignorance, we put the mad person into jail. So we can forget about him. At least we can go on ignoring that he exists. In my town, one of my friend's uncle was mad. They were rich people. I used to go in their house often. But even I became aware after years that one of his uncle is kept in an underground basement, chained. I said, why? They said, he is mad. There were only two ways. Either we keep him in our own house, chained, and of course we cannot keep him chained in the house, otherwise everybody will feel worried and concerned, and people will be coming, and his children, his wife, watching their father, their husband. And it is against our family's reputation to send him to imprisonment. So we found this way. We have imprisoned him underground. His food is being taken by a servant. Nobody goes to see him. Nobody goes to meet him. I persuaded my friend that I would like to meet your uncle. He said, but I cannot come with you. He is a dangerous man. He is mad. Although he is chained, but he can do anything. I said, he can at the most kill me. You just remain behind me. So if I am killed, you escape. But I would like to go. Because I insisted, he managed to get the key from the servant who used to take the food. In 30 years' time, I was the first person from the outside world, other than the servant, who had met him. And that man may have been mad, I cannot say, but now he was not mad. But nobody was ready to listen to him. Because all mad people say that we are not mad. So when he said this to the servant, that tell my family I am not mad, the servant simply laughed. He even told, but nobody took any note of it. When I saw the man, I sat with him, I talked with him. He was as sane as anybody else in the world. Perhaps a little more. Because he said one thing to me, that being here for 30 years has been a tremendous experience. In fact, I feel fortunate that I am out of your mad world. They think I am mad. Let them think, there is no harm. But in fact, I am fortunate that I am out of your mad world. What do you think? He said to me. I said, you are absolutely right. The world outside is far madder than you had left 30 years before. In 30 years' time, there has been great evolution in everything, in madness too. You stop saying to people that you are not mad, otherwise they will take you out. You are living perfectly beautiful life. You have enough space to walk. He said, that's the only exercise I can do here, walking. And I started to teach him vipassana. I said, you are in such a perfect condition to become a Buddha. No worries, no botherations, no disturbances. You are really blessed. And he started practicing vipassana. I told him, you can practice sitting, you can practice walking. And he was my first disciple as far as vipassana is concerned. And you will be surprised that he died a sannyasin. He died in the basement. But the last time I had gone to my village, I went to see him. He said, I am ready. Now you initiate me. My days are counted. And I would like to die as your sannyasin. I am your disciple. For 20 years you have been my master. And whatever you had promised is fulfilled. And you could see from his face, from his eyes, that he is not the same person. A total transformation, a mutation. The mad people need methods of meditation so that they can come out of their madness. The criminals need psychological help, spiritual support. They are really deep down sick, and you are punishing sick people. It is not their fault. If somebody murders, that means he has carried the tendency to murder in him for long. It is not that out of nowhere suddenly you murder somebody. In one of the existentialist novels, there is a story that a man is caught. In fact, it is not right to say caught because he never tried to escape. He killed a stranger who was sitting on the beach. He came from the behind. And hit him with a dagger. The man died on the spot. The man was absolutely a stranger. The murderer had never seen his face even, because he killed him from the back. Even after the murder, he had not seen his face. He had no idea whom he has murdered. It was a very strange case. And existentialism has been of great help of bringing strange cases into light. The court asked the man that, "We cannot understand why you murdered the man." He said, "It is not a question of why. I simply wanted to." There are people who try to find excuses to do something that they want to do. I am a simple person. Why bother about an excuse? Just do it if you want to do it. Now he is saying a truth of tremendous importance. People try to find an excuse. For example, they are angry with you and you think they are angry with you. That is not true. They were carrying that anger. It was boiling within them. They were sitting on a volcano. They were just waiting for somebody to give them an excuse. And you gave the excuse. And they exploded. It seems you are responsible for the explosion. No. You are only an accidental excuse. You are not responsible. Somebody else would have done it if you had not done. It is just coincidence that happened, that you happened to pass by. Otherwise, somebody else. This murderer says to the court that, "I am a simple man. I don't bother about rationalizations and excuses. I simply wanted to kill." And it was really an exciting experience. When I forced the dagger into the back of that man, whom I don't know, who has not done any wrong to me. When the blood dashed out from his back, I had the greatest exciting experience in my life. I am perfectly happy. You can give me any punishment that you want. I am not going to say that I have not done it. I have done it. I wanted to do it for long. And it is good that I did it. Now what you want to do with this man? Is he a murderer? Or a psychiatric case who has been prevented from all excitements in his life? Perhaps he has never known love. Because if you ask Sigmund Freud, he will say, that dagger is nothing but symbol of male's sexual organ, and dashing it into the back of the man is just an effort perverted, but an effort to have some entry into another body. That's what people are doing all over the world. Making love is entering into others' body. This man is certainly not in right shape. Things are upside down. But what he is doing is simply a sexual act. It has nothing to do with murder. The murder happened, that is just a byproduct. And why a man wants to enter the body of a woman . Because every implication has its own implications. It is because the man is born out of woman's body. He has come out of the woman's body. And he has never been so comfortable again. And he wants to be back into the womb of the mother. Every man is searching his mother's womb. These murderers are also searching the mother's womb, of course, in a wrong way. Unnatural. But they are not responsible for it. Your society is responsible for it. If a murder happens, then the society should be punished. Then the whole society should have to pay the penalty. Why it happened in this society? What you have done with the man that he had to commit a murder? Why he became destructive? Because nature gives everybody energy which is creative. It becomes destructive only when it is obstructed, when no natural flow is allowed. Whenever it goes towards nature, it is prevented. It is crippled. It is directed into some other direction. Soon the man is in a confusion. He does not know what is what. He does not know what he is doing. Why he is doing. The original reasons are left far behind. He has taken so many turns that he has become a jigsaw puzzle. nobody needs death penalty. Nobody deserves it. In fact, not only death penalty, no other kind of punishment is right. Because punishment never cures the person. Every day, more and more criminals go on growing. Every day you have more prisons. This is strange. It should not be so. Just the opposite should be the case. Because with so many courts and so many punishments and so many prisons, crimes should be less, criminals should be less, slowly, slowly prisons should be less, courts should be less, but that is not happening. I am reminded that in Great Britain, just 100 years before, corporal punishment for stealing was the common thing. And the punishment has to be given in a public square, so people can see what happens when you steal, just to teach them. It will be a lesson to them that you steal and this happens, a public humiliation. The person has to be naked and lashed till blood starts oozing from his body. But what happened just 100 years before, the punishment has to be dropped. Because it was found that when the crowd was there and thousands gathered to see, it is not a good sign. When thousands of people come to see such an ugly scene, it shows something in them is wrong. Perhaps they also want to beat someone naked, but they don't have guts. At least they can see it being done. That's what you are doing everywhere. You love football. You don't play. There are professional players. You watch. And you become identified with a certain team of football players. And you are so excited, as if you are participants. Just look at the crowd in a stadium. Thousands of people so excited, as if their life and death is in question. Shouting, screaming, throwing their caps, their hats, fighting with each other, because the person by your side is giving encouragement to the party you are opposed. The football players are playing their game, and the thousands of spectators, what they are doing, they are also in a psychological way participants, perhaps more excited than the real players. The real players are professionals. That is their business. And these idiots are unnecessarily becoming so hot. And this is not the whole crowd. The real crowd is sitting by their television sets. Millions. Listening commentaries on their radios. I had a friend in the university, he was a professor, but a fan of hockey matches. In India, football is not so hot. One day I was sitting in his room and he was just listening to the commentary on his small transistor that he used to carry continuously, keeping it just close to his ear so he does not miss anything. And I was sitting and I told him that I have come to talk something to you. He just told me, "Be quiet." Went back to his commentary. And then something happened, he threw the transistor. And the transistor broke into pieces. I said, "What happened?" He said, "My party." They failed me. I had so much hope for them. But I said, if your party has failed, why you destroyed the transistor? He said, "You won't understand." I was in such anger. That you should feel fortunate that I did not hit you with the transistor. But this would have been too much. First you destroy your transistor and I'm just sitting and waiting here for you to get finished with your transistor, and you wanted to hit it to me. I said, "Yes, I was so angry," he said, "I could have hit you. For a moment I was just going to hit, and then I changed my mind." I said, "This is good. Next time I will never be around anybody listening to the commentary on hockey matches. This is dangerous, even to be around. Now this man is so much involved. The whole world has become the world of spectators. What you are seeing in a movie, I don't think you are seeing a movie. You become part of it. You become identified with some character in it. When he falls in love, you fall in love. When he kisses his girlfriend, you are kissing his girlfriend. This is sheer nonsense. But you cannot expect anything more from the humanity that you have got around. So those spectators in Great Britain, what they were doing, they were so much involved in watching that there were pickpockets all around cutting their pockets. When it was brought to the notice of the parliament that what kind of lesson you are teaching, because exactly there where crowd has gathered to learn the lesson, there are people who are cutting others' pockets. And it is easy because those people are so involved, they have completely forgotten themselves and their pockets. And that man is being beaten almost to death, and those pickpockets, your whole reasoning is wrong. You cannot teach by punishment. That's what down the ages your jurists, legal experts, politicians have been telling, that if we don't punish people, then how we are going to teach? Then everybody will start committing crime. So we have to go on punishing so people remain afraid. They think that fear is the only way to teach. And fear is not the way to teach at all. What fear teaches is it makes people acquainted with fear. So the original shock is no more there. They know what can happen. At the most you can beat me. And if one person can take it, I also can take it. And out of 100 thieves you can get one or two persons. Now, if you are not ready even to take that much risk, 98% success, 2% failure, then what kind of man you are? Nobody learns from any punishment. The very person who is being punished, he also does not learn what you want him to learn. Yes, he learns something else. He learns how to become a thick skin. Once a person goes into prison, prison becomes his home. Because there he finds people of alike minds. There he finds his real society. Outside he was a foreigner. There he is in his own world. They all understand the same language, and there are experts. He may be just an amateur, an apprentice. It may be his first term. I have heard one man enters into a prison. In the dark cell, he sees another man resting. The old man asks him, "For how long you are going to be here?" He says, "For only 10 years." He said, "Then you can stay close to the door." Just 10 years. You seem to be new. "I'm going to be here for 50 years. You just remain close to the door. 10 years will be gone just... and you will be out. But when you are with experts for 10 years, of course you learn all their techniques, strategies, methods, their experience. You will find your jails almost certain kind of universities where crime is taught. On government expense, you will find professors of crime, deans of crime faculty, vice chancellors, all kinds of people who have done every kind of crime that you can imagine. And certainly the newcomer starts learning. And one thing is in the air of every prison. I have been to many prisons. It happened in Madhya Pradesh when I was a professor there. One old man, Mangaldas Pakwasa, was governor of Madhya Pradesh. He was very much interested in me. So much so that although I went on telling him that Kaka, he was known. To everybody as Kaka, uncle. "I don't believe in God." He said, "Whether you believe it or not, just when you reach tell God something for this Mangaldas Pakwas, because I am an old sinner. Being in politics, you know, I have done everything that I should not have done. Now I am getting old. But I said, you will be dying first, Kaka. Can't you see a simple thing? You will be reaching first. So even if you want, you can help me, I cannot help you. I'm not going that early. But he said, I suspect that I will ever be going to heaven. Governors and prime ministers and presidents, I don't think anybody of them are going there. This whole company is going to hell. He was a very simple and good man. Because he was governor, so I had immense dimensions open for me. I asked him that you give me a general public permission. If I want to visit any jail, I should be allowed. He said, there is no problem. And the biggest jail was in Jabalpur itself. It was the central jail of the whole state. 3,000 die-hard criminals. So I used to go almost every Sunday till he remained governor. I continued to go there. And what I saw, this was the climate. And in other jails also, I went in smaller jails, but the climate was essentially the same. The climate was that it is not crime that brings you to the jail, it is being caught. So if you know the right ways to do wrong things, it is not a question of doing right things. The question is doing wrong things in a right way. And every prisoner learns right way of doing wrong things in jail. In fact, I have talked with prisoners and they said, we are eager to get out. I said, for what? They said, you are a friend and we don't hide anything from you. We want to get out as soon as possible because we have learned so much. We want to practice. Just the practicals were missing. It was all theoretical knowledge. For practicals, you need the society. Once a person becomes a jail bird, then know where he will find himself at ease. Sooner or later, he will be coming back to jail. And slowly, slowly, jail becomes his alternative society. More comfortable. He feels more at home. Nobody looks down over him. Nobody thinks that he is superior and you are inferior. Everybody is a criminal. Nobody is a priest and nobody is a sage and nobody is a holy man. All are poor human beings with all the weaknesses and frailties. Outside he finds that he is rejected, abandoned. In my town there was a permanent jail goer. He was a very beautiful man. His name was Barkat Miah. He was a Mohammedan. Miah is exactly a Mohammedan respectful word like sir. Or the Indian Hindu ji. If you simply say Gandhi, it will not look respectful. You have to say Gandhi ji. For Mohammedans, Miah simply is equivalent to ji or sir. And it was strange that Barkat Miah, who was a permanent jail goer, almost 9 months in jail, 3 months outside, and in those 3 months also, every week he has to go to report to the police station that everything is okay and he is here. But I had a great friendship with that man. My family was very angry. That why you keep company with Barkat? My family used to say to me that a man is known by his company. I said, I understand you, that means Barkat will be known by me. And to give a man a little respectability is not anything bad. They said, when you will see things in the right way. I said, I'm seeing it right the way, exactly the right way. Rather than Barkat degrading me, I am upgrading Barkat. You think his evil is more powerful than my goodness? You don't trust my integrity. You trust Barkat's integrity. I said, whatever your opinion, I trust myself. Barkat cannot do any harm to me. If any harm is going to be done, it will be done to Barkat by me. And he was really a beautiful man, nice, and he used to tell me, you should not move with me in the city. your family is a respectable family and I am a jailbird. You should not be around me. And if you want to meet me and talk to me, we can manage to meet somewhere outside, by the river bank. He himself lived near the Mohammedan cemetery where nobody goes unless one dies. One goes only once. He was not allowed to live in the town. In the town nobody was ready to give him a house on rent. Whatsoever rent he was ready to pay, nobody was ready to take any rent and nobody was going to take him in. There, on the Mohammedan cemetery, was a house, nothing but a shelter for rainy season, summer. People die in all kinds of climax, not bothering about anybody that it is raining and you can wait a little, there is no hurry, but people are people. If they can harass you, they will harass you. They will die when it is raining, just dogs and cats. Or is it cats and dogs? But it makes no difference. When it is raining, who is first and who is second does not matter. So that shelter was just for such times people could sit there. But people don't die every day in a small place, only once in a while. Barkat used to live in that. So he said, you always are welcome in my house. That shelter he used to call house. And of course there was no fear because nobody could steal anything from Barkat. Nobody even could dare to go in the night, in the dark, near Barkat Mia, because he was a dangerous man. Just by my side was a big shop. A kind of general store having all kinds of things. He stole from that and he told me that tonight I am coming. To Modi's shop. That was the name of the shop. And he came and he did a good job. He took out all the ornaments and everything and managed to escape, but finally was caught. Not that day, after 2 months, in another stealing, he was caught. And there it was found, one watch that he was wearing was from Modi's store. So it was worked out and he was forced to confess that from where the watch has come to you. And he confessed that from Modi's store, because that's the only store in the town who has watches to sell, from where it can come. Everybody's watch comes from Modi's store. But other things were also found into his home, in that shelter where he used to keep his suitcase and things. And few things he had sold. So he was sentenced for 6 months. After 6 months, these are called a real gentleman. After 6 months, when he was released from the jail was in the district place, which was near about 60 miles, he came in a taxi. He stopped the taxi before Modi's store. Went into Modi's store, Modi stood up, afraid that now there is going to be trouble, this man is released. And he said, pay the taxi. I don't have any money. And you know, for 6 months you have kept me unemployed. So some money for my pocket. I was present there because Modi's store was just next to my father's shop. And Modi had to pay the taxi and gave him few rupees and told him that, don't come every day. He said, till I manage something, I will have to come, because 6 months you kept me unemployed. You are responsible. And he continued to come every day. And I asked Modi, Modiji, you go on giving Barkat Mia. He said, what to do? He can cut my throat. He is a dangerous man. You don't see, when he comes inside the shop, he shows me a knife. Nobody sees it from the outside because of so many things in the shop. With one hand he has the money, and with the other hand he shows me a knife. So everybody thinks I'm giving the money happily. You think I'm giving happily? I said, no, I know the knife, because Barkat Mia is my friend. And he tells me everything. I asked Barkat, how you became a thief? He said, for the first time, I was jailed absolutely innocent. But I was poor. I could not hire an advocate. And the people who wanted me to be forced into jail had some vested interest. My father and mother died when I was very young, 14, 15. And my other relatives wanted to capture the whole family's possessions, house, land, and they wanted to remove me out of their way. And they simply managed. They reported to the police that I have stolen something. They had put that something into my bag in my house. And there was no other way to get out of it. The thing was found in my bag. I was sent to jail. When I came back, my land was gone, my house was sold. My relatives has managed to disperse everything and distribute everything. I was just on the streets. So first I was innocent when I went in, but when I came out, I was not innocent. Because I had come with a certain graduation. I told in jail to everybody this is what has happened to me. I was only 17. They said, don't be worried. These 9 months will be soon finished. But in 9 months, we will also give you the last finishes. And you will be able to take revenge from everybody. And I started to take revenge from all the relatives. And this was simply tit for tat. They have forced me to become a thief, and I proved that, okay, now I am a thief. I destroyed this whole gang of my relatives. I stole everything that they had. But by and by I became more and more involved. You can have 10 cases in which you are saved, but in 11th you are caught. As you grow older and more efficient, you are caught less. But now there is no problem. In fact, imprisonment proves a relaxing place, a holiday from work and worry and all kinds of things. Few months in jail are good for health. Disciplined life, exact time to get up, to go to work, exact time to go to sleep, just enough food to keep you alive. More than that makes you sick. He said, I am never sick in jail. Unless I pretend and want to be in the hospital to escape, otherwise I am never sick. Outside I fall sick, but never inside. And outside is a foreign world. And everybody is superior and I am inferior. Only in jail I feel a freedom. It's strange that when he said, I said, you say, in jail you feel freedom? He said, yes. Only in jail I feel freedom. What kind of society is this in which people in jail feel freedom and outside they feel imprisoned? And this is almost the story of every criminal. A small thing in the beginning, maybe he was hungry, maybe he was cold, needed a blanket, and just stole a blanket. Small necessities which should be fulfilled. Otherwise the society should not produce these people, though nobody asked them to produce them. On the one hand you go on producing people more and more and more, and there are no things enough for them, neither food nor clothes nor shelter. Then what do you want? You are putting people in such a situation where they are bound to become criminals. The world population has to be cut to one-third if you want crime to disappear. But nobody wants crime to disappear, because disappearance of the crime means disappearance of your judges, of your advocates, of your law experts, of your parliaments, of your policemen, of your jailers. It will create such a big unemployment problem. Nobody wants anything to change for better. Everybody talks things should change for better, but everybody goes on making things worse. Because worse things are, more people are employed. Worse things are, you have more chances to feel good. Criminals are needed for you to feel that you are such a moral, respectable person. Sinners are needed for saints to feel that they are saints. Without sinners, who will be the saint? If the whole society consisted of good people, do you think you will remember Jesus Christ for 2,000 years for what? It is the criminal society that remembers Jesus Christ for 2,000 years. It is a simple thing to understand. Why you remember Gautam Buddha? If there were millions of Buddhas, awakened people in the world, what a speciality Gautam Buddha had got? He would have been lost in the crowd. But 25 centuries have passed and he stands like a pillar, a mountain peak far above you and your heads. In fact, Buddha, Jesus, Muhammad, Mahavira are not giants, you are pygmies. And every giant has an investment in your remaining a pygmy. Otherwise, he won't be a giant. This is a great conspiracy. I am against this whole conspiracy. I am neither a giant nor a pygmy. I have no vested interest at all. I am just myself. I don't compare myself with anybody. So nobody is lower than me and nobody is higher than me. Because of this simple fact, I can see directly, because there is no vested interest creating diversions to my vision. And this is my immediate response to the question that death penalty is simply a proof that man is still needs to be civilized, needs to be cultured, needs to know human values. In this world, nobody is a criminal, never has been. Yes, there are sick people, they need compassion, not imprisonment, not punishment. All prisons should be transformed into psychological nursing homes. There is no need to bother to prove somebody guilty or not guilty and years of argument. There is no need. Because this whole thing is needed so that the innocent person is not punished. But I tell you, still the innocent person is punished more than the real guilty one. Because the real guilty one becomes an expert by and by. The innocent person knows nothing. He can be caught very easily. In a civilized society, if somebody is suspected of doing something, there is no need to take him to the court, there is no need to force him into a police torture. All that is needed is to take him to loving people who can take care of him. Whether he is innocent or guilty does not matter. Because even if an innocent man gets treated, there is no harm. Love them, be compassionate to them, feel them dignified, respected. This man, Barkat Mia, used to tell me that if I am respected, I can stop stealing. But they cannot respect me. If they cannot respect me, then this is my way of taking revenge. I will go on doing everything that harms the society. And I said, your logic is right. This society is exactly the wrong society. That's why it is so rare that a right person is born in this society. Otherwise, all are criminals. Few are known. The majority is not known. Few are caught. The majority is not caught. But the whole society is sick. So my response is that no punishment is needed, because no disease requires punishment. No sickness needs penalties. These people need respect, love, treatment, understanding. These people need meditation. You will be surprised, Barkat Mira started meditating with me. Because I have found his graveyard was a beautiful place to meditate. Almost nobody came around because people are afraid of coming to the graveyard. They come only finally, when there is nothing left to be afraid. And they don't come by themselves, they have to be brought by four people. Then they come. Otherwise, nobody comes. Even in the daytime, people are afraid of graveyards, particularly Mohammedan graveyards. Because in Christian graves are also bodies and ghosts inside. But they are cemented, marbled. Mohammedan graves are very dangerous. Just mud. Ghosts can come out very easily. In the night they slip out without any trouble. No cement, no stones, nothing is used. Just the body is put in and mud covers the body. That's all. So people are very much afraid. Barkat used to live alone. And I used to sit with him late in the night. And by, just the way he has learned crime with criminals, he started learning meditation with a meditator. My experience is that if you have something really valuable in you, then it starts flowing towards the other person. The other person is almost like a slope. Just as the water flows from up to downwards. If you have something valuable, it starts flowing down. And one day it happened that Barkat changed. And I brought him to my father and I said, look at Barkat Mia. for almost 2 years he has not done anything wrong. Still, your society is disrespectful towards him. Look at this man, I have brought him to show you that I have not become a criminal, he has become a meditator. Barkat Mia is still alive. Is very old. The last I saw him was in 1970. He had come to give me send off to the station. I said, Barkat, you never come to give me send off. I come and go so much. He said, but this is special. I strongly feel that I can say I know we will never meet again. But you have given me so much. You have given me a rebirth. I was a criminal and you had made me in the true sense a human being. I said, I have not done anything. This meditation is just like infection, disease. You don't be grateful to me. It is just infection. He said, don't try to stop me from being grateful to you. I know you don't like anybody to be grateful to you, but I will never be seeing you again. So let me express my gratefulness. And he touched my feet, which is very difficult for a Mohammedan, because Mohammedanism teaches not to worship any human being except God, never to bow down to anybody. I said, Barkat Mia, you are a Mohammedan, you are not supposed to touch the feet of a human being. He said, forget all about that Mohammedanism and I am just a human being and I am absolutely free to show my love, my gratitude, my thankfulness in any way I decided. Who is Prophet Muhammad to decide for me? I have seen it happen again and again. I saw it happen with a madman. I saw it happen with a criminal. I have seen it happen from every nook and corner of life. For these 30 years, thousands of people have come in my contact and I have seen it happen that if you have something authentic, they are going to catch it. It is unavoidable. You are not in any way converting them, but the conversion happens. And when conversion happens on its own, it has a beauty, a grace.
An Osho Talk. From Darkness to Light. Responses to Questions. Number 4.